This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
And welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour, first program of the year, a special program for this holiday weekend on New Year's weekend, featuring presentations from the November Financial Sense Investment Strategy Conference. Now back to Jim Poplava.
All right, in the first hour, we talked about sort of a 40,000-foot view of where the world looks today, both globally and here in the U.S. Given the fact that we think that we're moving into a late stage of a business cycle and the final phase of a bull market, how do you invest in this kind of a cycle? I would tell you it's going to be much different than what you did during the first two phases because the markets shift. They become more concentrated. The number of sectors going up become fewer in nature. And many stocks individually start going into their own bear market, even though the market continues to make new highs. So let's talk about preparing for the final phase of the bull market. We're going to look at valuations and the Fed rate cycle, how to invest, the case for active management, preparing for the top, what you want to look for, and strategies that would mitigate risk. Now, this is a chart going back to 1975, and this red line here is the price earnings ratio of the stock market. You can see where it got in 1999. The PE ratio on the average stock got up to almost 30. The low was 7 back in 1980. The median is 16. Today we're selling at 18 times earnings, 16 times earnings, next year's earnings. Can you say the stock market is cheap? No. Can you say it's in the bubble? No. So in this phase of the market, value does well. You have to look at different sectors that are beaten down. You start looking for where you can find value, whether it's Europe, and you have to look globally. You can still find value today. I've never seen a time in my life where you could get Exxon at almost 10 times earnings with almost a 4% dividend yield. So you have to be more selective. Valuations can improve as corporate profits improve. Interest rates still favor equities. What happens to bonds when rates start going up? They start going down in value. There's fewer alternatives, and this has always amazed me. I got in the business in 1980. Somebody would call that the good old days, because I remember my very first client in Lake San Marcos buying her a 10-year treasury note at 15%. Can you remember those days? Can you remember when you used to go to the bank and they give you a 12%, 13% and a free toaster, Vegematic? You know, today they don't even want your money. I don't know if many of you realize at the institutional level, banks such as J.P. Morgan are charging their institutional clients interest to keep your money on deposit. Because the new Fed regulations, if you keep your money on deposit, a large institution, they actually charge you interest. Just like buying European bonds and you pay the government interest for them to borrow money from you. As I mentioned in the last hour, when the Fed moves from phase four of easy money policies to phase one of the beginning of the tightening cycle, that's the second best time to be invested in stocks. Returns in the market are still positive. During stock market rate cycles, stocks do well, because the economy is still growing, corporate earnings are still growing, and one of the biggest drivers is mergers and acquisitions. We get a merger and acquisition newsletter every single day, and it's just absolutely amazing at the number of deals that are going down right now, and especially how that's driving the debt market. The other thing is corporations are flush with cash. Anybody have any idea how much corporations have spent since this recovery buying back stock? Anybody guess? Over $2 trillion. On an annual basis, just between corporations buying back stock and central banks are buying stock. They're not stupid. At 0% interest rates, would you rather get 3 and 4% dividends, or would you rather get 0% or pay another central bank for having money on deposit? Central banks are spending almost $500 billion investing in the stock market. So between corporations and central banks, you're talking about $1 trillion going into the market. That's what's been driving it. It hasn't been individual investors. Fed created liquidity. Think about it. The Fed expanded its balance sheet by $4 trillion. That means it put $4 trillion into the banking system that banks could invest or into the markets. Stock buybacks have been over $2 trillion. 2015 will set another record of mergers and buyouts in the stock market. And of course, we have central bank purchases. Now, we have a saying in the market, bull markets never die of old age. The Fed kills every one of them. And we have another saying is they will keep raising interest rates until something breaks. People think that monetary science, with all these PhDs from Harvard and Princeton running the Federal Reserve, it's a precise science, like a, you know, like the temperature of an oven. You can turn it into 350 degrees and comes out perfect. Doesn't work that way. They're experimenting along the way, and they never know with the lag effect until rates go up to a point and you have something that happens. Either the economy then starts gaining momentum on its own with rate cuts. In the opposite direction, it starts to slow down and rates go up. They never really know other than hindsight. So as we talked about in the first hour, I really don't think they're going to be lucky if they can get interest rates to 1.5%. But as you can see right here, here's the recessions. These are the bear markets. Fed killed every single one of them. We have another bear market. If the Fed did nothing but not raise interest rates, I suppose we would eventually have another financial crisis, because what would we get in assets? We'd get a bubble. And if you'll notice one thing, when things start to get overheated in the market, what do you have? I call it the open mouth committee. And that's Federal Reserve governors coming out saying something hawkish. What they're trying to do is jawbone the market down in a direction. It gets overheated. They start coming out with hawkish statements. Stock market comes out and corrects, and they come out and say, oh, no, 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 we didn't mean that. We didn't mean that. Remember the taper in 2013? Bernanke goes on Capitol Hill and he goes, oh, surprise, we're going to cut back printing money. Stock market loses 7.5%. All of a sudden, no, 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 we didn't mean it. We didn't mean it. And then, of course, they change their mind. So there are a lot of things that the Fed does, but if you want to talk about bull markets, they usually come to an end as a result of Fed rate-raising policies. Now, as you head into a late cycle of a business cycle, the early phases of a rate-raising cycle, strategies change. Think of the seasons of nature. What you have is sector rotation occurs, because what happens in the latter stages of a business cycle, not all sectors of the economy are doing well. Not all sectors of the stock market are doing well. So you start seeing sector rotation, and sectors perform differently in the final phase of a bull market than they do in the early phases. In the early phase, everything goes up. I don't care what you buy. It's going up. Most stocks will go up. Markets become sector specific in fewer companies. And this is something I want to drive home to you, because it's very deceiving. If you turn on the financial channels and you see the Dow was up 100 points, the S&P was up 20, and the NASDAQ was up 5, it becomes meaningless in the final phase of a bull market. What you need to know is that what sectors are going up, what companies are going up, because it's like a battle. At the beginning of the battle, you got the general and he's leading a large swath of troops up the hill. As you get towards the end of a bull market, there's fewer and fewer and fewer troops following the generals up the hill. The generals are your big blue chips. They're the ones that drive the index points up, like IBM, which is a high-priced stock. That'll drive the index up. So if you're looking at the index, you're saying, wow, things are pretty good. We're hitting new records. But if you look underneath, the market is starting to deteriorate. When you get to the latter phases of an economic cycle, the more mature sectors become more important. Returns begin to concentrate on technology. You see it in consumer staples, energy, and you can see the returns there. It begins to concentrate. There's 10 sectors in the S&P. If you take a look at the tech boom, in 1999, the NASDAQ was up 70%, and the concentration of technology stocks was what drove the index. It was the high-priced stocks like Dell, Microsoft, Intel, AOL, a lot of the big tech names. As many of you know, there's another movie out right now about Steve Jobs. I found it rather remarkable, and I remember this. In 1998, Steve Jobs comes back to Apple Computer when Apple bought Next Computer. And they were talking to Michael Dell about, what do you think about Steve Jobs coming back to Apple? And I'll never forget this comment. He said, you know, the best thing Steve could do is liquidate the company and give the money back to shareholders. Michael Dell took Dell private around $20 billion. Today, Apple's market cap is about $750 billion. Most valuable. And I believe before this bull market ends, you could see Apple become the first company in history to have a $1 trillion market cap. They're sitting on $200 billion in cash. One sector that does very well in the latter stages of the business cycle, what happens? People are consuming more energy. Remember the graph from the first hour showing the number of car sales, the aging of the fleet, and the miles driven? What does that mean? More miles driven. People are consuming more gasoline. If you look at valuation, valuations in the energy sector are the lowest they've been in half a century. Energy went through a bear market from the summer of last year until recently. We saw a lot of energy stocks, even the big cap stocks like Exxon and Chevron. Exxon, Chevron lost 25-30% of their market value. You can see the relative performance of energy versus the S&P. Another sector is doing well, and it's loaded with cash. Heck, Apple alone has got $200 billion of cash. The margins on tech companies are over 30% return on equity. And so the only thing is, it's the second best performing sector. It's flush with cash. They have strong balance sheets. Although many of these technology companies, the thing that you can tell times have changed, if I would have told you in 1999 that you could have got a 3% dividend from Microsoft or 4% dividend in Intel, you would have thought, you know, Jim, you're crazy. But some of the best dividend-paying stocks you can find in the technology sector, some of the stocks with the highest increases in annual dividends are in the technology sector. Bill Gates has got to be a pretty happy guy right now. I mean, when you think about it, his stock a couple of years ago was $27 a share, $52 a share, and I think he's, what, $76 billion? Have an interesting story. We're getting off sideline here, but I got to kill some time. So anyway, I bought a sailboat in 1998, and my salesman said, hey, I want you to meet another guy. So we went over to the San Diego Yacht Club, and we were having lunch. And I was talking to this guy, and he was one of the gentlemen that rebuilt Fashion Valley here. He was moving his business from Seattle down to San Diego because he was getting a lot of construction contacts. And he asked me what I did for my living, and I said I manage money. He said, you know, I know a guy just like you, but he's rather unique. He only has one client, Bill Gates. He manages Bill's money. And he said, you know, I found Bill Gates fascinating. He said, I was on Alaskan Airlines flying down from Seattle down to San Diego. I was flying in first class. And I said, I looked across the aisle. I was looking at this couple. And I asked the stewardess. And I said, that guy looks familiar. Who is he? And the stewardess comes up to me and says, that's Bill and Melinda Gates. So they land at Lindbergh Airfield. Bill and his wife get off the plane. He walks up to baggage, gets his own luggage, and rents a car from Hertz. The wealthiest man in the world, flying first class, renting his own car, and picking his own baggage. Now, obviously, he couldn't do that. I thought it was just absolutely fascinating to be that wealthy and just like a sort of a normal guy. Anyway, so much for Bill Gates, but he's pretty happy going from 27 to 52. I think he's worth about $76 billion. All right, this is another area I want to spend some time. In the early stages of an economic recovery in a bull market, the stocks that do exceedingly well, financial stocks, consumer discretionary, technology, and industrials. As you move into the mid-cycle, you've got technology and industrials. Where we're going in the late stage of the cycle, materials, energy, raw materials, consumer staples, healthcare, energy, and utilities. As we move into the recessionary area, the areas that do well, consumer staples, healthcare, telecom, and utilities, what happens is consumer discretionary does poorly because unemployment starts to rise. You see a gradual shift into defensive sectors of the market because the economy is now starting to slow. We're heading closer to a recession and a bear market. Institutional managers get more defensive. Now, at the end of this cycle, you can see consumer discretionary does very poorly. One of the things that we've seen in this economic recovery, especially with the drop in energy prices and gasoline, consumer discretionary stocks have done rather well. You've seen that in consumer spending, restaurant spending. As you get into the latter stages, as the economy starts to slow down, layoffs start to go up, consumer discretionary becomes a poor sector. Investors want predictability. As you get to the end of the cycle, you want things that are basically, you want a Warren Buffett type stock, something that people have to have. You know, a Procter & Gamble, all of us men get up every single day, and guess what? We use Gillette razors, toilet paper, shampoo, basic necessities, pharmaceuticals. You know, if your doctor says you need to take this pill for blood pressure or cholesterol, you're not going to sit there and say, I don't know. You know, the market didn't look good today. I don't think I'm going to renew my prescription. Necessities do well in the latter stages of a cycle. In the latter stages of a cycle, stocks are still doing well, believe it or not, high-yield bonds. You know, a lot of you have heard about junk bonds, but believe it or not, there's less risk in junk bonds today than there is in investment quality bonds. Investment quality bonds offer little in return, and tell you folks, there isn't much difference between triple B and double B. And a lot of the price of risk has been priced into the high yield market where it has not been priced into investment grade. And I would ask, why would you want to take 3% on a bond tying up your money for 10 years when the stock is paying 3.8% going up 7 or 8% a year? I would submit to you the stock has less risk if it's a dividend aristocrat. Now, this is just opinion, but in the latter stages, as we head into a recession, the thing that does well is bonds and cash. Why do bonds and cash do well in a recession? Depending on the kind, in a recession, what is the Fed doing? They're bringing down interest rates, and so people get defensive. The reason recessions are important and why we have spent a lot of time talking about the economic cycle is, let's take a look at what happens in a recession. The worst, obviously, was the Great Depression. Take a look at 1931. The market was down 84%. 1937, this is why the Fed does not want to make... The economy was on recovery from 1931. And then in 1937, the deficit was going up, inflation was heating up, and the Fed said, uh-oh, we got to put an end to this. And they raised interest rates, put us right back into a recession in a bear market with stocks losing 50% of their value. The last time we had a major downturn was in 1973. That was the oil embargo and the six-day war in the Middle East. Take a look at why boomers have been impacted. Take a look at the drop down in 2001 and in 2008. So that's why recessions following the business cycle has a lot of implications for what is going to happen to the market. Nearly every recession has led to a bear market, with few exceptions in the last 100 years. We pay a lot of attention to leading economic indicators and the things that we like to follow as the economy, because things that are happening in the economy are much easier to spot than the day-to-day fluctuations that occur in the stock market. The economy will tell you 6 months in advance or more where the market's going to be heading, because stocks follow what's happening in the economy, and the leading economic indicators give you advance notice. But the reason we have moved more towards active management, as you can see there, look at the drawdowns in these last two bear markets compared to what we've seen. I mean, you want to see something go down 50%, 60%, 70%? I mean, that gets kind of scary. So that's why I think following the business cycle has become more important. Here's the good news. Americans have never been this wealthy. If you take the combined value of real estate in this country and the combined value of the stock market, that's what that graph shows you right there. You can see there at the top there. But take a look at what happened in the last downturn. Main reason was, for the first time, real estate lost value compared to the 2000 and 2002 bursting of the tech bubble. Real estate prices were still going up. Why? What was Greenspan doing? Greenspan was driving interest rates down to 1%, and that gave us the housing boom that followed in the next 6 years. That changed in 2007 because that was the mortgage crisis, that was ninja loans, all the crazy stuff that banks were doing. The thing about the world that we live in today is asset classes are more correlated than they've ever been in the history of investing. And what that means is the days of just sitting there on buy and hold are really over, because you can go through extended periods of time. What if you owned and had all your money in an S&P index fund in 2000 and kept it there for the next 13 years? What was your rate of return? Zero. You actually made nothing in 13 years, just as you're making nothing on cash. This is something I like to point out. These are two of the most popular and oldest bond funds. That's Bond Fund of America, and that's Fidelity's Bond Fund. That is the returns in the 1970s. You lost money every single year. We think individual bond funds going forward are going to be a place of loss. And just to give you an example, this is 2013. Here are interest rates rising, and here's the value of TLT Treasury shares. TLT lost 13% in 2013. And think about it. The interest rate on a 10-year Treasury went from May 1.6%. By the end of the year, it was at 3%. That's what happened to the 10-year Treasury yield. So you can lose money even in bonds. During recessions and bear markets, cash and bonds outperform. Stock allocation becomes more defensive, and you don't want to be out of stocks completely. There are a lot of people that are, say, they're great market timers. They can get you out at the top and then get you back at the bottom. If you know any newsletter you subscribe that has consistently done that, can you please see me at the break? I'd like to talk to them. But why you want to minimize your drawdowns, you can see here, as you look at losses, the greater the loss, the greater the return you need to make up. Think of the Great Depression, where you lost almost 89%. You needed a 900% return to break even again. That's why you want to minimize drawdowns during a downturn. But it's also important, we're big believers in individual bonds versus bond funds. When you own a bond fund, you have no maturity. And by the way, has anybody heard, I started to raise this issue in May. It's becoming a serious issue with regulation going forward with the SEC. But a lot of the bond funds you're invested in are illiquid. Let me repeat that again. A lot of the bond funds you may own are illiquid. The Wall Street Journal did an article about a month ago. I raised this issue in May. The way the public buys investments and the way it's sold, if you're looking at Bond Fund A and you're looking at Bond Fund B pays 4.7%. Bond Fund A pays 4%. What are investors going to do? They're going to go to Bond Fund B, right? Because it's a higher yield. What you don't realize is those bond funds that are paying the higher yield are heavily invested in illiquid, non-traded bonds, meaning they couldn't even liquidate them within 7 days. A lot of the Vanguard funds, one of the Vanguard funds has 40% of its portfolio in illiquid funds. The SEC is now proposing new regulations. They're trying to get through, and the industry is fighting it, that in the prospectus, you tell your investors how illiquid your portfolio is. And they're moving forth with regulations where the bond fund may not liquidate you. They may just say, we can't. Or they may charge you a penalty of 5%. And by the way, beginning in 2016, if you're in a money market fund, money market funds will liquidate at net asset value. They can break the buck. Meaning that if you put a dollar in a money market fund and we have a crisis in the bond market, you may not get a dollar out. So you better be careful where you keep your money and where you invest your money in bonds, because they are trying to get ready, because sooner or later, what do we know? We're going to have a recession. With that recession, we're going to have a bear market. What do people do when you get into a bear market? They panic. They sell. So they're already putting regs in place. They've already done it with money market funds. That takes place in 2016. And they're moving forward now with bond funds, because a lot of these bond funds out there are sitting on illiquid bonds. The other issue I have raised that I think is key, as a result of Dodd-Frank, the bond market is becoming less liquid because they are driving the banks out of the business in terms of profitability, meaning there's fewer market makers in the bond market. It's one of the reasons that we like individual bonds. If I have a high quality bond that matures in 5 years, I could care less what John Q. Public's doing. I'm getting my interest rate. It never changes. When the bond matures, I get my money back. I'm in a bond fund. I don't have those guarantees. I'll give you an example of why we think diversification is important. Let's just say that you became a client and you came in October 1st, 2007, the very peak of the stock market. You put 50% of your portfolio in bonds, 40% in stocks, and let's just say you kept 10% in cash. At the bottom of the stock market, your bond portfolio was up $120,000. Your stock portfolio was down $219,000. Your cash was up $2,000. In the worst bear market since 1973 in the Great Depression, you would have been down 9.7%. Now, one of the reasons why we don't recommend you get completely out of stocks, how do you know you've hit the market bottom? What were people telling you in August? Crash. Have you ever watched these television commercials predicting the end of the world? The market bottomed in 1932. Most people don't realize, you think of the Great Depression, you think of horrible times. In the stock market from 1932 to 1937, the stock market went up 367% in 5 years. In July of 1982, severe recession, it was up 267%. 1994 went up another 251%. Since March of 2009, the stock market is up 178%. One of the reasons we don't believe in market timing, first of all, I have yet in my 35-year career met a market timer who has done it perfectly. If you stayed invested, you can see your rate of return since January 1st of 1980. Look what happens to your return if you miss the 10 best days of the stock market. Look what happens to your return. Look what happens if you miss the 10 best days, the 30 best days, or the 50 best days. The reason is, What happens to you psychologically? One of the most difficult things about investing is to control your emotions. One of the reasons we use economic models, we use rules, is to control emotions. Because what happens when you get out of the stock market? You get out because you think something big, something bad's going to happen. What happens to you psychologically when the stock market starts going back up? Psychologically, you say, oh, you know, I don't want to get in now. I got down here. It's here. I know if I get up here, I'll probably lose more money. So it's very difficult to get back in. And that's why missing, because a lot of times what happens when the stock market bounced back in 1 week, we had the Dow Jones Industrial Average go up almost 1,000 points in 1 week. The other reason for keeping money in stocks, this is Coca-Cola. In 2007, Coca-Cola paid 68 cents a share in dividends, the beginning of the financial crisis. In 2008, we were steeped in the financial crisis. Coca-Cola raised its dividend to 76 cents. 2009, we finally bottomed in the financial crisis. Coca-Cola raised its dividend to 82%. During the entire financial crisis, your income went up 32%. Since 2007, your income is up 129%. How many of you would like to get 129% increase in your income? Can't think of too many people that object. One of the mistakes that people make is they think because the stock is going down, their income is going down. It's just the opposite. If you own the stock, Coca-Cola stock, as you can see right there, Coca-Cola stock lost a third of its value. By the end of 2009 and 10, it got back to where it was. So if you just sat there, your income went up 32%. It's different if you're in a mutual fund, because in a financial crisis, a mutual fund can cut its dividends and capital gains. If you own the stock, it's different, because if you own the stock and you own those shares, they're going to pay that dividend out to you. You do not want to be completely out of the stock market. We've been talking about two things. We think we're moving from the mid to the late cycle of this business expansion, and we are now moving to what we think will be the final phase of the bull market. What are the things that you look for in the final phase of a bull market? What are the signs that tell you we are heading towards the top? This is 2013. Take a look at the crises. This is the beginning of 2001. 2013 may be another 1973 for stocks. College grads may be stuck in low jobs. U.S. economy fears weighs on the market. Market extends slide as Fed concerns. U.S. prepares for strikes on Syria. The U.S. government shutdown. Americans on the edge. Oh my God. Stocks were up 33% that year. Fast forward to 2014. Senate confirms Yellen. Private employment, new high. U.S. condones lifting accrued bans. All kinds of bad news. Another good year for the stock market. One of the things that we think is very important to do, and this reminds me of my favorite baseball movie. Anyone ever see this, For the Love of the Game, with Kevin Costner? You remember he's on the mound. He's being jeered and booed by all his fans, and he knows he's coming to the end of his career. It's an important game leading up to the series. He's really got to strike out this great guy that's up at bat. Everybody's screaming, yelling at him, and he says, tune out the mechanism. Clear the mechanism. The problem with the information age is you get too much information on a daily basis. You watch the cable channels, they're telling you all kind. Why did the stock market go up? Quite honestly, folks, they have no idea. They're just putting stuff. I used to do television news in the 90s. I had to do it 5 days a week on television. And I'll tell you, it was really hard coming up with why the heck the market did what it did. I had no clue, but I had to come across as I was intelligent. But one of the things that you have to do in this market is clear the mechanism. There's so much daily news that we're bombarded. You get it on yourself. Heck, you get tweets. You get texts. By the way, just to let you know, I know how to text now. Finally learned that last year, because I finally figured out if you want to call and talk to your kids, they don't answer their phone and they don't answer their emails. Dad, get with it. So now I got an Apple Watch, and so I can text them. But you got to clear the mechanism. One of the ways that we clear the mechanism, our favorite indicator is the LEIs, the leading economic indicators. And as you can see right here, look how closely they track the movement of the stock market. There's less noise with LEIs. If I'm doing television, I'm doing radio, I got to come up with something to tell you every single day. So we make all this big to-do about nothing, about one single economic report, which we know they can revise the following month, and there's going to be four or five other ones. But when you're doing daily shows, you got to talk about something. To me, the LEIs are probably the most important thing. It's a composite of all the major indicators, and it tells you more about where the economy is heading than anything else you follow. We don't pay much attention to a single economic indicator. Yeah, we may look at it and notice it. We might want to look at its trend. But the LEIs, we have our own proprietary index that we use. We have 19 indicators we track on a monthly basis. I'm more concerned about what the economy is doing on a monthly basis, what the LEIs are doing, than one individual report that can change and get revised. The other thing that you start seeing towards the end of a business cycle, the labor market begins to deteriorate. And the key number I want you to watch for is a 7.5% unemployment. We start getting up into the 7%. We're at 5% right now. That tells you we're heading for trouble. The other thing is weekly jobless claims up 15%. So you'll start to see, remember what I said, when the economy begins to slow down, less sales, less profits, as companies make less profits, what do? They start laying off workers. They lay off workers. The unemployment claims begin to rise, and along with it, the unemployment rate. Bull markets are born on pessimism. I remember I started my career in 1980, and I remember very well, I was a subscriber to Business Week. They said the death of equities about a year before the greatest bull market of the 20th century. I interviewed both of these guys on my radio program in 1999. Dow 40,000, Dow 36,000, just like I interviewed the authors of Gold 10,000 in 2011. You remember what it was like in the 2000s? Remember the crazy ads, low interest rates? Anybody ever read my series? I think I wrote it in 2004 called The Day After Tomorrow. I wrote it about the housing market. It was interesting because I was doing research for these articles and there was a big development where we lived that was being built. I interviewed the salesmen at the models. I interviewed the lenders. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I remember a lender telling me, why would you want to put any money down? Housing is going up. You can invest your money and make money in the stock market, make money in real estate. You're stupid if you want to put money down on a house. That were the lenders. And that was back in the days you didn't even have to prove you made money. You just filled out an application, put in, I think I made this much. And believe it or not, you'd get passed. 2009, remember when I said clear the mechanism? 2009, the end of the financial world as we know it, the New York Times. U.S. bankrupt, Dow Jones closes at 6 years low. Market crisis will happen again, BBC. World financial crisis not over. The recession just became a depression. The beginning of a bull market and an economic expansion. 2011, Bernanke is thrown in the towel just before he launched QE2 and 3 and 4. The end of Europe as we know it. Market turmoil heralds more gloom. This time it's really different. Let's go back to August and September this year. We're in a bear market. Carter Worth, are you ready for the next bear market? Stocks are headed for a bear market. Bear claw will strike again. Where are we now? Back up. As you get to the peak of a bull market, how many stocks as a percent are gaining new highs? Anybody want to guess? Show of hands. 10%?
2%.
2%. You saw the slide.
I just listened to you every week.
At the end of a bull market, anywhere from 2, 4, or 5%, the average, the indexes are hitting new high. The guys on CNBC have tuxedos on. They're breaking champagne. You're seeing the Dow at a record high, the S&P at a record high. They're celebrating. On average, only 6% of the stocks are making new highs. And the real key towards a market top in a bear market in a recession is not just to follow the leading economic indicators, but also to follow what main stocks are doing, because you will start to see, technicians will call it deteriorating breath. What that means is, as the stock market hits new highs, look at the number of stocks that are hitting new lows. You see that? Fewer and fewer stocks are starting to participate, even though the market is going up. Same thing here. At the top, only 5 or 6 of the actual stocks. And because the way the indexes are made up, and part of it is mathematics, in the Dow, stocks are weighted by price. So the highest priced stock carries the most weight in the Dow. So things like IBM. In the S&P, the stocks that have the largest market cap carry the most weight. So what happens towards the end of a bull market, money starts to concentrate in fewer and fewer and fewer stocks. It's doing two things with the indexes. On the Dow, it's raising the price of the stock, which is raising the average. On the S&P, it's raising the market cap of the stock, which is raising the S&P. So if you're following this on the news and you're saying, oh my goodness, the S&P just made a new high, the Dow just made a new high, you may not realize that almost 60, 70% of the stocks that make up the index are actually declining. Remember the heat map that we showed you in hour one about how well the states are doing? Take a look at what happened and what this graph looked like. Look at all the red. In June of 2007, the economy was still growing. The official recession began in December of 2007. And you can see how this map changed. By 2008, we were in a recession. We just weren't calling it a recession. And you can see here what it was like in 2009. Here's what we look like today. The real problems are in the shale states, things like Wyoming, North Dakota, Alaska, once again, energy. So you can see there, September report showed 41 states with increasing economic activity over the past month, with 6 showing decreasing activity. So this alone tells us we are moving into the final phase of the bull market. Towards the end, there are none. If we get towards the top, you only have maybe 4 or 5% of the stocks that are going up, and then eventually you get into the bear market, they're all falling. And you can see that reflected once again in the advanced decline line. You can see the index is hitting new highs, but you can see here the advanced decline line is actually falling. And you can see they're tracking the indices. So as you get towards the end of a bull market, you start focusing in sectors and you run greater risk owning individual stocks. So one way to mitigate that is rather than be in a specific stock, you might want to be in a specific sector ETF because it minimizes the risk that you see. Because what happens towards the end of a bull market? Companies start missing their earnings. Their earnings start to go into decline. What happens when you miss your earnings to your stock? Think of Disney, down 10% in a single day. So when you're owning a sector ETF, there's less stock-specific risk. You have more stock-specific risk as you move closer to the end of a bull market. The stocks that do well are usually your consumer staples. There have been more bear markets in consumer stocks, material stocks, industrials, financials than any other sector. The least amount of bear markets have been consumer staples, utilities, and telecoms, because what are they? Basic necessities. In a bear market, in a recession, you're still going to turn on the lights and you're going to cook in the oven. In conclusion, as we look at the stock market today, it's not in a bubble. It's not cheap. There's still valuations. We are moving now to what I call a stock and sector specific market as we move into the final phase, which is still a good phase of the market. Top sectors, energy and technology, in the latter stages, commodities and staples. Think of 2008, even though the economy was in a recession, In 2008, oil got up to $150 a barrel, and commodities were doing well, even though stocks were not doing as well. Bear markets are dangerous for your health, usually caused by recessions. You can't time the market perfect. You can mitigate risk. And remember, as you prepare for the top, filter out the noise that you follow. If you want to follow two key things, follow the LEIs, follow the Philly Fed that'll tell you what the states are doing. As more and more of those states turn from green to red, it tells you we're getting closer and closer and closer to the final phase of that economic recovery. And then also following the sectors and the stocks themselves. The number of stocks that are rolling over and actually going into decline will tell you more about the market's health. Diversification, sector positioning becomes more important in the final phase. This is a graph we've updated that was given to me by my late friend Kennedy Gamage. And Kennedy talked about cycles in the market. And you've heard Jim Cramer say, there's always a bull market somewhere. And if you look at historically on the market, we have gone through different phases. There are phases when paper does well, stocks, bonds, and currencies. There's the 20s, there is the 30s. In the 30s, it was a great time to be invested in commodities. Here's the recovery coming out of World War II. Here is the 70s, where you were in commodities. Here were the 80s, it was paper assets. Here's the last decade, which was tangible assets. We're now in paper. We are going to have another bear market. We are going to have another bull market in commodities. Things cycle. It reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from Ecclesiastes: to everything there is a season. There are seasons to the market, there are seasons to the economy, and there are seasons to market cycles. But take a look where we've gone. I have never seen a wealthy investor in CDs. And especially today. Wealth in this country is created because we are a capitalistic system. It's created by companies creating wealth, real estate, assets. And so as we see here, we cycle through these things over a period of time.
Well, it was in-depth and worth it, a presentation of the Financial Sense Investment Strategy Conference from November of last year, this being presented for the first Financial Sense NewsHour show of the year. As always, during the New Year's weekend, we run a special program. Next week, we'll be back on our normal schedule with the first hour of market summaries and other related issues, and the second hour of The Big Picture with Jim Poplava and myself, John Loeffler. On behalf of everyone on the Financial Sense staff, we wish you once again a Happy New Year.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.